Okay, we're continuing in the book Shabbos Malkus over on page Kuf Mem Gimel, Perek Yudalit. The topic is Ta'anugim, pleasures. We're continuing with the theme of God wanting us to enjoy the Shabbos physically. We explained that yesterday. It's a very short chapter. Umiyata, Mahu Shir HaSe'uda Umatamim Shetzorach Lohachim L'Chavad HaShabbos. So now, what is the amount of the meal and the tasty foods that's necessary to prepare in honor of the Shabbos? How much do we need? V'nemer al pi mashal. We'll give an example. Ashir muflag me'ashirei olam. A very, very rich man. One of the richest men. Kagon ha'Baron Rothschild me'hadora kodam. Like Baron Rothschild of the earlier generation. She'egiyas man chasunas bito yichidoso. Came the time for the marriage of his only daughter. And he comes to one of us and he says the following. Since I am preparing for the daughter of my the wedding of my daughter, and you understand that my will is, what my wish is, that they should prepare for the day of the wedding an unbelievable meal. Kiyala Baron Rothschild. That's fitting for Baron Rothschild. Ritzoni, I would like Sha'ata Ubne Bezcha Tikhu al Atzmachem Es Meleches Ha Catering. Took me a while to like cop that one. So I would like you and your family to take upon yourself being the caterers of my wedding, of my daughter. Okay, I'm going to hire you. So I'm asking from you, I'm asking you to prepare all kinds of different foods. And you have to remember, you have to know that this meal is not going to be called in your name, El Al Shmi, but in my name. They're going to say, Rothschild made this wedding, not Schwartz and children made this wedding. Right? It's not going to be known as the Schwartz wedding. It's going to be the Rothschild wedding. Right? This is the wedding feast for the Baron's daughter. Shakulam Yomer. Everyone will say, Zuha Su'uda Shehechin HaBaron. This is the meal that the Baron prepared. V'alkein Sarach Shetehe Be'emes Mechubedes Ad Kidei She'roi Likore Shmi Aleo. Therefore, you've got to, it's got to be prepared, and it's got to be an honorable type of meal that is fitting to have my name attached to it. Okay, not hot dogs and things like that, right? It's got to be something. What we expect a Rothschild meal to be? Steak. And he adds, and he says, "Upshita." And it's obvious, my intention is that you should not spend any expenses for me. You know, don't make it out of your own pocket. I have much more money than you. I don't ask for any of your own money. Buy everything you want as is necessary in every store. And you give me the bills and I pay all the bills. And obviously I'm going to give you a certain amount of money for your labor that you spent working on this. You're not going to have to pay any money, but you make sure it's a really good meal because it has to be befitting my honor. That's the analogy. That's the same idea of the Shabbos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Lanu, Hashem says to us, Shabbos Kodeshi Hayoyim Shali. Shabbos is my day. Shibo Ratzoni Laso Su'uda L'Chavod B'ni HaMisarchim Etzli Be'yom Hazeh. That I want to make a special meal that honors my children who are visiting me on this day. V'amnam Asura Eino Shalachem. But the meal isn't your meal, Ela Shali, but it's my meal. Ushmi Nikra Leh. My name is called upon this meal. Therefore, prepare special foods that there should be an honorable meal that it's fitting that my name should be attached to it. This is Hashem's meal for the children. And obviously, I don't expect you to spend any money on the meal that I want to give for you. I own all the silver and all the gold. I don't need your money. But prepare and go to every store and buy all the delicacies of the world. Levu alai, borrow it against me. Vani pare, and I'll pay it. I'll also give you more money for all the effort you made to prepare the meal. That's the Shabbos meal. Right? That's why you spare no expense. I mean, not wasting. You're not going to buy something you're just going to throw out after Shabbos. Right? But you buy the best because it's Hashem's meal. It's not your meal. And he's going to pay you back. That's what the Gemara says. Whatever you spend on Shabbos, right? Whatever you're supposed to earn during the year is decided on Rosh Hashanah, except for your expenses on children's education and that which you spend for Shabbos and Yom Tov. Hashem is saying, you just borrow and I'll pay you back. Let me just finish one more paragraph, then we'll take questions. That's the end of the chapter. If a person really thinks about this, a fear should grab a hold of us. How could you ever fulfill this obligation? How is it possible for you to succeed in making a meal that's befitting one that should be called in God's name, whose kindness and desire to bestow goodness is limitless and beyond investigation? And as much as you add and increase to the delicacies, you will not be able to see the fulfillment of the will of Hashem. Whatever you give isn't really going to be enough for His honor. So what do we have to say for all this? We have a general rule in the Talmud. Hashem doesn't come with complaints to His creatures. He doesn't give them tasks that they can't complete just to punish them. So, you know, you do your best. It's not your job to finish. But you're not free to not try your best. So, everyone has to try according to his ability. But he's also to remember, what are you engaged in? And whose meal are we really preparing? You have to always remember it's God's meal. Okay? So if the most important dignitary came to your home of someone you really wanted to impress, what kind of meal would you serve? So if that's the kind of meal you would serve, then you try even better to try that for Hashem. It's preparing Hashem's meal. And now remember, it doesn't mean you have to eat it all. You know, prepare this meal and invite a lot of guests and give them the good food. Right? You could prepare for guests too, Noah. You can prepare also. Even, you know, you are obliged too to prepare a meal for God. Right? So you're not off the hook at all. Okay? So that's the idea. So it has to be a really fancy meal. Okay, we're not expecting things you're not capable of doing. Not things you're capable of doing and not, you know, throwing money away. But this is clearly, it has to really be an unbelievable meal. Because it's Hashem's meal that He's preparing for everybody else. Yes, not a question. Sherry? No, I don't know what you're going to ask. Yes, Sherry? No? That's right. No, I didn't say to what you can't afford. You can listen. You don't have to give everybody. Not everybody needs a 1 pound beef tenderloin.
So there's
you serve it, but give everybody a regular portion. You don't eat like pigs. You got to remember you're having challah. You made challah, and the best challah is the one you bake, right? Not the one that bakeries make, right? And then you're serving fish, and you're serving salad, and you're serving soup, and all this. By the time you come into the main course, you're not hungry for this kind of piece of tenderloin, you know, a little piece. So you buy it.
So you do.
Yeah. If that's what you like. If you don't like eating that, you know, obviously you're not going to serve that. No, you could buy the best if you're doing it because it's Hashem's meal, and you're not doing it because you're wanting to pig out. You can buy that, right? But you have to be careful. Don't go to people who price gouge. You know what I'm saying. You go to where, you're not gonna you don't want to waste money. You don't want to waste money, but you want to buy something nice. You're buying something nice, but it's just for those meals. That's it. Should cut back during the week to be able to afford what you're going to do for Shabbos. Right? That should be the nicest food. Again, there has to be a balance. If you're going to knock yourself out making the meal and you have no koyach to get ready for Shabbos, then you won't eat the food with the right kavana either, and you've defeated the whole purpose. If you don't come to Shabbos rested and ready for the Shabbos, then nothing you're going to do on Shabbos is going to work. So if you have to now, if push comes to shove and you only can do so much, right? You can't, who says you have to prepare the food? Get a caterer to make it. Hashem's paying for it.
Isn't that maybe
fun? Right? You want to bake challah? Bake challah. It's a mitzvah to bake challah. It's a mitzvah. Baking challah isn't going to knock people out. But you don't have to. You don't have to spend hours and hours preparing food if you don't have that time, and it's going to knock you out and you come exhausted into Shabbos. Okay, but if the preparation is in such excess that you can't take a nap before Shabbos, and you can't be rested for Shabbos, and you can't be anticipating the Shabbos with total relaxed feeling as the Shabbos is coming in, then everything you're preparing is going to be a waste, because your focus won't be the right focus as you're serving and eating that food. We were talking, I believe the case was women who work and have chosen to work and they don't have time and there's minimal time now. That was the context of that discussion, if I recall correctly. Because the point was, how can we do this? We don't have time. So I said, that was the point. So if you don't have time and you work from 9 to 5, okay? So now, you're not going to spend hours and hours preparing the food to come home knocked out for Shabbos. That's right. So you organize. Okay, fine. But again, if push came to shove and you only could do one of the two, that was the context of the question. If push came to shove, so then you prepare less and be ready for the Shabbos, because that's the more important thing. It's more important to be psychologically and emotionally ready for Shabbos than worn out, barely making it for Shabbos, preparing a million things in the last minute, and you're barely lighting candles on time, and you're rushed, and you're not dressed properly for that. That's not correct. So if you'd only have so much time in the day, and you only can do so many things, you have to prioritize. And if that means you have to hire a caterer, okay, don't hire the most expensive caterer. You can hire, you can go into that's what I said. You go to Sobeys and buy what they have. And by what they have. When I was in that context, it wasn't after going through this book, and not everybody necessarily has the same bitachon levels that I could say, just go to a caterer. Okay? But, Sobeys does a good job. The food from, food from Sobeys is okay. You can buy. Listen, there's no end. There's no end to how much, right? But certainly, what are you going to do if there's, you have these kind of exclusive caterers that charge you like 100 times the normal price. I wouldn't go to them to say that's Lekavod Shabbos, because that's Lekavod ripping you off. Right? what I'm saying? There are certain caterers who just charge crazy, because they're fancy and exclusive in this and every narishkeit. That's not Lekavod the King. You know what I'm saying? It's not Lekavod the King, all these narishkeit and that the plate has to be a certain way, and there has to be this thing and a thing flying up in the air, and this and that, and really there's no food on the plate, and they charge you $150 a plate for their narishkeit. That's not lekavod hakeinu. That's mamish. As they say in Yiddish, arois geworfen Geld, throwing money out. I'm saying, you know, you have a proper, you have a proper, you know, a proper meal. Any kind of chasana meal, okay? You look at any chasana meal, believe me, Sobeis makes just as good, if not better. It really is. You're having a lot of times you complain, but you have it one time. You know, I've been to many weddings, and the food is far from, not even close to what my wife makes, not even close. And, you know, you could get some fairly decent food at Sobeis and things like that, and that's fine. We talked about the spirit for the whole book already. We're on this topic this week. What do you want from me? Last week we talked about the singing. I don't understand. I understand your question. And this chapter, there was emphasis on singing. There's emphasis on how you dress. There's emphasizing on preparing for the Shabbos. Every chapter emphasizing. So this week we're emphasizing food. I don't understand the question. But that this is the aspect of food. But it is clear that no housewife should be ragged and worn out because of the Shabbos preparations to get ready for Shabbos. It just doesn't work. And it makes them hate the Shabbos. And you have to have bitachon. And again, you don't have to order so much food where you throw out food either. Right? And you're not mechuyev to invite guests at your table. You're not mechuyev to invite guests just to socialize and to feed them. And if you are, they should help you pay for it too. You know what I'm saying? You know, oh, I can't afford it. I have 50 guests. Who says you have to have 50 guests? I like to have guests. Big deal. Let them make their own meals. I'm not talking about people who don't have it. It's kiruv and this and that. But there's a lot of people who just like to have guests over for fun. You know why? Because they don't know how to talk to their kids. And they think it's going to be a boring Shabbos table. It's just me and my wife and my two kids. It's going to be a boring Shabbos. We invite a lot of people. It'll be fun. So we'll talk to the adults, and the kids can play the kid. You know, that's a mistake. It's a big mistake. You should be with your kids. That should be the Shabbos. Now, if you're doing Kiruv, that's a different story. You're doing Kiruv, and you're inviting people for the purpose of Kiruv. That's an entirely different story. But just, you know, this idea, we're going to have three couples together, and, you know, of course the wife's going to be overwhelmed. You know, I have to cook for 16 people, and this and that, and you expect me to get it catered, and this and that. It's going to be expensive and everything. Who says you have to do it? You want to socialize? Have them come after you eat. This whole idea, we have these five-hour lunches, you know, is like a narishkeit, a five-hour lunch. What do you have to sit at the table for 5 hours? Believe me, it isn't singing smiros for 5 hours. You know, you want to socialize, you have your meal with your kids, tell your friends, we invite you over for dessert afterwards. Or as they say, for tea. Right? And you come over afterwards, and the husband comes and sits down and learns with the... What are you supposed to do anyway? The husband sits down and learns with the other guys, and the wives, they say to them together. Whatever. Right? And then you could spend the afternoon, you could socialize. But, you know, so how big's your family already, besides my family? Right? How big's the family? So you have four people. How expensive is it to feed four people? Most, five people. That's not so expensive. That's right. So who says you have to cook for more? Since when? Everyone has to have tons of guests. Because the problem is, it's not going to be a great meal. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be this. It's not going to be that. Who says that? It could be lots of fun with your children. Talk to your children. Sing with your children. Who says it's got to be a whole big affair? You want to have, but what are we going to do? We're going to finish the meal, and we've got a whole long Shabbos. So fine, invite guests after the meal. Invite them after the meal. That's what to do. That's what to do. So that doesn't have to cost that much. So really, that's just to cook for your family doesn't have to cost that much. And if you're doing Kiruv, and at the expense of Kiruv, you're worn out before Shabbos, then forget about the Kiruv. Forget about the Kiruv. If you can't handle your, you want to do more, then you have to handle more, and you have to be able to be quicker and more efficient and more well prepared in advance, and that's what you have to do. If you can't do it, then you're not able to do Kiruv, and that's all. And there's other ways to do Kiruv, and not just by having people over for lunch. There are ways to do it. Yeah.
Just a question to clarify: they're saying we should only be inviting guests to Kiruv purposes as opposed to guests in the community.
I didn't say only, everything depends on the means of the people and if you can balance everything.
Balance is a key.
I'm saying the inviting over for the meal, I don't necessarily think is such an important thing. You can invite people, if people just invite them to come over after lunch, just change that modality. You know, it's you know, what do you need these women? We're having guests, so a woman can't go to shul, she can't do this, she can't, she's all stressed out because Nebuch, she's having 16 people at the table. Like, I laugh, like, that's like a big number, you know. We have 11 every night. I mean, you know, it's nothing. I'm saying, so what are you getting stressed out for? Don't make a lunch for so many people. Tell your friends, come over for dessert. Finished. You know, when you finish eating, there's nothing wrong. That should be the social moray, as opposed to everyone's inviting for lunch and this and that, and there's so much stress involved in that. Who needs all that stress? Just invite them over after the meal to come over. Tea and coffee and cake is not a big stress. That would be an optimal way of doing it. And the women would be much less stressed. You know, what can I say? That's what it should be. Yeah?
You emphasize the breaking of the challah, which is more important than buying the meal. Why the difference?
Baking challah is a mitzvah. The mitzvah of there's a mitzvah of separating challah from the dough. You make a bracha on it. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs, making challah and what?
The meal itself.
You're preparing for Shabbos. You're preparing for Shabbos, but there's not an additional mitzvah. Women have three specific mitzvahs that they have to do. One of them is the mitzvah of challah. That's their mitzvah. Everybody prepares for Shabbos, but you know, again, within reason. If you only have so much time to spend preparing for Shabbos, so you're going to have to spend some time preparing yourself and buy, and some items you're going to buy. So I'm saying it's a bigger mitzvah to make the challah and buy the chicken, as opposed to make the chicken and buy the challah. That's all I'm saying. Because it's a special mitzvah. Making challah is a very special mitzvah. I'm not saying making the chicken wouldn't be a mitzvah either. But in priority, challah is higher than that. It's higher than that. Okay, so we're all clear on that? It makes sense? Is everybody okay? Ladies, you're okay? Yes? Okay. What?
I feel much better we're not throwing the chicken
out. You feel much better you're not throwing the chicken. If you have the time. If you have the... listen, if you're very... Listen. If you don't have a big family, you have older kids, it's a lot easier. You know, you go back to the days when you have three or four little kids and they're screaming and yelling and needing diapering and this and that, and it's that's a full-time job and you barely can manage. Well, it depends. It depends for who. It depends for who. There's some who have kids and are working. Right? So there's a lot of factors. There's a lot of factors over here. But it's... You know, but again, as long as it's within reason and you remember you're doing this all because Hashem told you, I'm inviting you to my meal and I want you to make my meal look good. I mean, they should really have cards, you know, this meal was sponsored by God. This is God's meal. You're invited to God's table. And this is God's table and, you know, this is His meal and it's in His honor and He wants us to come and He wants us to have a fancy meal. So that's how you're doing it. So, it's, you know, and if you don't have to worry about it, listen, for that matter, you can go a step further. If you have a cleaning lady and you need the cleaning lady to clean the house for Shabbos and to help you with the cooking, Hashem has to pay you for the cleaning lady too. But he said, you have to come in worn out for Shabbos. You can bring a cleaning lady to come on Friday and she cleans the house and she, or helps you with the cooking, right? That's fine too, if you like that better. So there's various ways to spin the issue. But you got to realize, those real costs that are involved in preparing for Shabbos, Hashem will pay you back for it. That's all. He will pay you back for it, as long as you're doing it reasonable and not meshuggah. And it's for Hashem's honor. And that's the key, for Hashem's honor, not because you like to have rib steak. You know, that's key. That's key in that whole issue. Not you're going to fress at the meal and overeat and roll off from the table and collapse on the couch because you can't breathe after all the food you ate. And it wasn't in God's honor. It was not in God's honor at all. So that will be the determination. You're wondering, how come God never pays me back? The answer is, did you do it for God's honor, for your honor? If it's your honor, you get nothing. Right? You know that famous story, right? The famous story where the father is marrying off one of his children, and he has married children already who live in different cities. Right? So the father sends a letter to one of his children who live in another city. He says, listen, I'm making a wedding. I want you to come to the wedding. You're my son. Come to the wedding. I know you got a wife and kids. So you know what? Buy new clothes. Don't spare any expenses. And I'll pay for everything. Just make sure everything's fine for the wedding. So the father had this son. He's a rich. And the son was pretty well-to-do also. The father also had another son who was poor, living in that out-of-town city. So it happens. So the richer son, Himamish, they went out to the fanciest clothiers and they bought the most expensive clothing and they hired an expensive coach and this and that and everything. His bill is $10,000-$20,000. Right? Meanwhile, the other brother who was poor, he didn't get the letter. The richer brother got the letter. So he was told about the wedding, but the richer brother didn't help much, and the poor brother comes in fairly poor. So they come to the wedding, and the son's really happy. We've got fancy clothes, this and that. At the end of the wedding, he goes to the father and says, so, Dad, can you write me a check? So he says, what for? He says, what do you mean? You said because you should spare no expense. He says, I don't understand. I understand. You had a brother who was poor. Why didn't you help outfit him too? Why didn't you make sure he had why didn't you pay for everything he had? Don't you know he's my son too? And I want him to come looking good for the wedding in my honor? So the fact you only dressed up your own family means you did it for your honor, not for my honor. So I'm not paying you for that. So that's the same thing. You know, you're making sure that you have to make sure that other people have too. Are you giving tzedakah to organizations like Link that make sure that other, or Tom Chay Shabbos, that make sure that other people have for Shabbos? So if you're not caring that other people have for Shabbos, and then you're not, then you're doing it just for yourself. You're not doing it for Hashem. So there is a lot of scrutiny done by Hashem to know that if you're doing it for His honor or for your honor. And that's a real critical thing. And only you, and maybe not even you know, only Hashem knows who you're really doing it for. And again, it comes across how you eat at the meal. Right? If you're eating in the king's table, you know, you don't eat with both hands on the table with your face in there. Like that. You don't eat like that when you're in the king's table. You're eating, you know, like a mensch, slowly. You know, if you're not singing Zmiros and saying Divrei Torah at the table, you're certainly not at Hashem's table. Who are you fooling? That you're at Hashem's table when you're just eating? You know, you sit down, you know, you invite friends and you invite guests and there's 60 people at the table and the whole meal you're fressing away. Right, all the husband. Yeah, you're talking about hockey. You're talking Lashon Hara. You don't sing any Zmiros. You don't say any Torah. So you know that certainly was not Hashem's table. So Hashem's going to give you nothing for that meal. You did it for yourself. So that's critical that we remember whose meal and whose table and what comportment we have to have at that meal. Okay, now we went and spoiled everybody's meal, right? Right. Hopefully we've elevated everybody's meal. And if you can't sing so well, that doesn't matter to God. I don't have such a good voice. He didn't ask if you have a good voice. He just said sing. And sing and do what you can. Right? Okay. Moving on. Perek Tesvav. New topic, Moshe. We're going to talk about something else. We're going to focus on something else now, okay? No problem. Mesiras Nefesh, which is the exact opposite, it would seem, from everything we're talking about now. Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice. Self-sacrificing for Shabbos. B'mincha shel Shabbos on Omrim, in the Mincha prayer we say, V'yal menucha sam yaktishu eshemecha, and through their rest, they sanctify your name. U'b'shem ha'arizal kosev, in the name of the Arizal is mentioned, the Arizal says we should have kavana when we say these words, that we are willing to give up our lives if that's what it takes to sanctify God's name. So now, and the Arizal is learning it from a pasuk as to a Shabbos, that we should sanctify your name through our resting. So he says, "Umash v'sheish keshem yuchad ben Shabbos kodesh l'mesiris nefesh al kiddush Hashem." There seems to be from the Arizal a unique connection between the holy Shabbos and the idea of giving up one's life, sanctifying God's name, and that's what is going to be explored in this chapter. Which really, you already know the answer. He's going to elaborate on it. So let's try to understand this concept through a midrash that discusses the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah tells us in the midrash, at that moment when Moshe was to die, Hashem called forth the neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu to leave from Moshe's body. Okay, this is all said in humanistic terms, so we can understand it. I'm sure it's much deeper than what really on the ground was happening, as they say. But God's calling the neshama, come, leave Moshe. It's time. Amala, biti, kuf chav shana kitzavticha hayoscha beguve shel shana. My daughter, I've given you 120 years in the body of Moshe. That's what I allocated. Now the time has come. You have to go. It's 120 years. Tzei al ta'achri. Go and don't delay. That's what Hashem told the neshama. Amr lefanav. The neshama responded to Hashem. Ribbono shel olam. Yodat ani she'ata Elohah. Kol haruchos v'kol hanefashos. Nefesh hachaim v'meisim mesur b'yadcha. Master of the universe, I know that you are the supreme God and you, of all the forces and spirits and souls. You are the living soul of the living and of the and the dead are all given over to you. V'atabarasani, you created me. V'atayitzartani, and you fashioned me. V'atanasatani begufa shel Moshe kufchav shana, you put me into Moshe's body for 120 years. V'achshav yesh guf tar ba'olam. Is there a holier body in the world more than the body of Moshe? It hasn't seen a putrid spirit ever. Florima vitolea, and no worms and maggots. There is just an unbelievable pure body I'm in. I like it very much. Veini rosas, man, I don't want to leave that body. It's mamish. It's a holy thing itself. Ba'osesh, at that moment, nishkwa kadosh baruch hu, Hashem kissed him, v'natal nishmasa, took his soul, b'nishikas peh, with a kiss of the mouth. This is the religious idea of the kiss of death, not the Italian version. Okay? This is the holy kiss of death. So it's a very unique med. It's a wondrous medrash. The last line or so, just flying off, who knows where? V'nei hatmiya geluya v'nora. The wonder is obvious. Ma perish einu shekadosh baruch hu omer neshama shel Moshe tzi'al ta'achri. What does it mean? God tells the neshama, go and don't delay. V'omeres, and she answers, ani ohevus also. I love him. V'nei rosa l'tzman. I don't want to leave. What's the question and answer? It seems that the soul is going against God's command. Question one. I mean, the soul should know better, shouldn't it? You don't argue. Soul doesn't. A person can argue with God, the body, but the soul's going to argue. Well, another thing that's hard to understand. Imanishama hisbira barichus gedola. If the soul explains with so much length, and the truth is, Rapinkus just brought down part of the message, the neshama had a much longer discussion of a defense. Lomayna Ratzalat says, explained why he didn't want to leave. Ulupsov, and in the end, Nadalkadish Brachas and Shvasov, and Ishikas Pah. At the end, Hashem takes the soul with a kiss. Hainulachar, it appears, Shalakach is in the Shama Bal Karcha Shalom Ritzonit. It appears that God took the soul against the soul's will. Right? Because the soul didn't want to go. If that's the case, and the soul didn't want it, Vechri Karl is in Ishikas Pah. How do you call it a kiss of the mouth? Areza misa v'sit neshama. That's death and the removal of the neshama. Doesn't sound that loving. It's not the wish of the soul. Where's the kiss? A kiss is usually something you like. So what are you saying? God kissed Moshe and then the neshama left. So you say God smacked the neshama. He smacked it, beat it up, and took it out. So that's two questions on this medrash. Next page. Kuf Mevav. Avol ha-beir nirakach. But this is the explanation. Klal gadol kavulanu balei ha-musar. Our ethical teachers told us a golden rule. Shakoras ha-tov mechayeves. Lasei ses ha-kol milvad ha-tov ha-atzmo. There's a rule in Hakaras HaTov, a rule of gratitude. If you have gratitude to someone, how much should you show it? So the truth is, you have a lot of gratitude. It should manifest in giving the person you have gratitude for everything you have. If you have gratitude for the person, real gratitude, you're really indebted, you give them everything you have, except for the thing that you have gratitude for. Okay? Hainu, for example, Mashal Mishnas Lachaver B'Matana Chevetz Mesuyim. Somebody gave a person a gift. It's a present. Very fancy gift. He gave him a house. $1 million house. Okay, it's a gift. Right? Yachal Anoisei Lidrosh B'Klal Akar Setov Afas Navsho. So now, the giver could want from the recipient gratitude. I mean, you should expect some kind of gratitude, right? Even his soul, maybe. But not the thing that you gave to ask for it back. I want you to show gratitude for the house I gave you. Give me back the house. Then what am I having gratitude for? In other words, if you owe someone a debt of gratitude, you should be giving them anything and everything, but not the thing that you have gratitude for, because then there's nothing to have gratitude for. Do you understand the idea? Val Kane, Maya Matana Hayachida Shekolada Makalabar. So what is the one unique present that everybody gets from his creator? Esatz Musa, his essence. Shesamazam Khaltzarchaim Ochalumi Shulkan Gavobachol Yom Vyom, that the food and the needs of life, he eats from the divine table every day. Avalas Atzmo Kibo Makadish Barku Vizeshalo. But his essence he received from Hashem, and that's his. That's his. Hashem gave him an essence, and that essence is mine. So Hashem says to Neshama, I'm asking you to leave. Ubetaina, with the reason being, Sharehu Yisbarach Zesha Kotzav Lo Lios Begum Shemosha, saying, I'm Hashem, and I gave a certain amount of time that you're in Moshe's body. I'll say, answer neshama. The neshama answers, "Hariyadu," the opposite. Kivin shata hu eloka kol aruchas v'abto barasai sani v'atay yitzaytani v'atana said v'gub shemoshu. Since you are the creator and you're the one who put me in there, ech yitachin shetavakes amatam echzar. How can you want the gift back? That's what you gave me. If you ask for that back, then I have nothing to have gratitude for. As a kolani chayev, I have to give you everything. I'm asking. I have to give you everything. I have to give my time, my effort, my energy. Everything I have to give you. As gratitude. But that which I received from you, myself, kivyachal, as it were, zeshli, it's mine. I don't have to give it back. Because from your hand I received it. So it's a little bit trickier than you think. You know, who got what? Who is the receiver here? Right? So I don't want to get into that. But it's the essence of Moshe really speaking here, not just the neshama. So the essence is saying, the essence, the combination of the body and soul is speaking. The chooser is speaking. The essential aspect of the human being now that has a body and a soul. So Hashem says, I want the soul back. He says, you can't take the soul back because that's the only thing you gave me. I can't give you back what you gave me. I'm not even obligated for gratitude. Quickly, we've got to just do at least one more prayer. I have to get a little notion. So Hashem says, Inachanami, Shatzurekis, you're right. I can't argue with you. I can't expect it to you by law. According to the letter of the law, I don't have to give it to you. I want you to give it to me back with a kiss of love. I want you to give me something that by law you don't have to give me. Not because you have to, because you want to and you love me. That's the emphasis of the kiss of the mouth. Not that Hashem gave the kiss to Moshe. She'echad nosa neshikah v'sheni eni nosa, that one gives the kiss and the other one doesn't give. El neshikas peh el peh, but it kiss lips to lips, mouth to mouth. Ha'neshim nosa nosa nes neshikas piv v'nish meschayv l'Hashem yisperach mituch avaratzen. But Moshe's giving the kiss on Hashem's lips, so to speak, and he's giving it. That's the pshat in the Medrash. It's a two-way kiss. So Neshikas Peh, Moshe, Hashem couldn't kiss Moshe unless Moshe kissed Hashem first. So he says, are you right? So if you only can give it to me if you really love me. If you really love someone, you even give them the one thing you have. But that doesn't come because of the responsibility of Hakaras HaTov. Hakaras HaTov is gratitude, but I don't have to love you. Love means I even give everything which you gave me that I don't even have to give you. So that's what a Kodesh Baruch Hu asks for Moshe Rabbeinu. All right. Now this really becomes what Mesiras Nefesh is all about. This will lead us into Mirtzah Hashem tomorrow morning as we'll continue this interesting topic.